Sairam, dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantanilam, the most happening place on the planet. And sometimes I feel you have to step out of Prashantanilam to see the beautiful glory of Prashantanilam. People who are outside Prashantanilam should step into Prashantanilam to see the glory of Prashantanilam. And people who have been living in Prashantanilam should step out of Prashantanilam to see the beautiful glory of Prashantanilam. And recently I was in Medan, Indonesia, and there I had the chance to visit the Nanyang Kuihui School, a regular school known in the community and by the government for the excellent quality of students the school produces. 80% of the students are Chinese, they are all Buddhists. The school's principal is a Sai devotee, Miss Lindavati, and she, along with a team of teachers, has been diligently working to integrate value education into every aspect of the school's curriculum. So much so that if you enter the school, your eyes will be filled with values, values, and nothing else but values, because all the doors are named after values. One door is called honesty, another door is called trust, another door is called friendliness, and so on. And the door which says trust is the door of the room of the accountant. And the door which says friendliness is the door to the room where the students play. And the door which says punctuality is the door of the prayer hall of the school. So all the doors are named after different values. All the class houses are named after values. The boards are full of values. The walls are full of values. And there are snippets of teachers' reflections on the walls, which is again full of values. There are students' reflections, again full of values. So this was such a invaluable experience, to just walk in the corridors of this amazing school. And the most beautiful part is the school's prayer. The school's prayer is the prayer that Swami himself wrote for his students decades ago. O Lord, take my love and let it flow in fullness of devotion to Thee. O Lord, take my hands and let them work incessantly for Thee. O Lord, take my soul and let it be merged in one with Thee. O Lord, take my mind and thoughts and let them be in tune with Thee. O Lord, take my everything and let me be an instrument to work for Thee. So this is what the students sing every morning there. And mind you, this is a regular school. This is not a Sai school. They cannot talk about Swami there. But the school principal has ensured that the kids grow up as beautiful blossoms of the Sai garden. What the school does every year is bring a group of students to Prashantanilam and just leave them here. That's enough. All the school has to do is bring young minds, let them step into Prashantanilam. They just ensure that they bring them to His lotus feet, and then Swami Himself introduces to each one of them in His own inimitable way. And invariably, the students who have come once ask, when can we go back again? When can we go back to the presence of Sai Baba again? When I asked one of the teachers what she liked in Prashantanilam, she said, peace. Another said, food. I found that interesting. Another said, discipline. So Prashantanilam offers something to each one, depending on what each one's heart is looking for, depending on what is most needed for every person's growth. What is most needed for every person to become a beautiful instrument in his hands. It was so beautiful, so heartening, so sweet to see these Chinese girls sing, O Lord, take my love and let it flow in fullness of devotion to Thee. Sometime back, we had given a new tune to this beautiful song by Bhagwan. Let's listen to that, and I'm going to send this tune to this school, to the principal of the school. It would be so beautiful for them to learn this new tune and sing it every day to the Lord. Let's listen to this beautiful tune done by our brothers in the studio some time ago.
Oh Lord, take my love. Let it flow in fullness of devotion to Thee.
Listen to it again and again, isn't it? You want to tell this prayer to yourself, to your Swami in yourself, again and again. Oh Lord, take my love, take my love. Let it flow in fullness of devotion to Thee. Oh Lord, take my hands, let them work incessantly for Thee. Oh Lord, take my soul, let it be merged in one with Thee. Oh Lord, take my mind and thoughts and let them be in tune with Thee. Oh Lord, take my everything and let me be an instrument to work for Thee. I'm reminded of someone who was beautifully shaped by Swami to be an instrument in His hands. He became a flute in the Lord's hands, and his life became a melody, a divine melody created by the Lord. And today, I'm going to share with you this story of this beautiful devotee. Once, when someone asked Swami, "Swami, please come to Africa in 2005, please come to Africa." Swami said, "I am there, I'm already there. I am working through Victor Kanu." This is what Swami said. And today, I'm going to share with you some snippets from the life of Victor Kanu. So that is what we are going to do in this last lap of Thursday Life, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Sisaram, dear listeners, and welcome to Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and as I just mentioned today, I'm going to share with you the life and the beautiful personality shaped by the divine of Mr. Victor Krishna Kanu, as he used to call himself. I'm going to play for you a talk that I had the opportunity to deliver in the Satsang Hall in the Prashant Nilayam Ashram. It is all about how to become a flute in his hands. And as I narrate this, I bring in the story of Sri Victor Kanu. So here is the Satsang Hall talk for us to ruminate on how to become an instrument in his hands. राधा के मन की पुकार मोहन के मुख पर बंसरी राधा के मन की पुकार मोहन के मुख पर बंसरी राधा की मन की पुकार प्रवाहित स्वर धारा अनुपम रास की रसवंती सरगम मोहन के मुख पर बंसरिया राधा की मन की पुकार मोहन के मुख पर बंसरी राधा की मन की पुकार प्रवाहित स्वर धारा अनुपम रास की रसवंती सरगम राधा कभी कृष्ण है राधा रूप रस रहस्य योग रास में सदा अष्टमी का चंद्र दोनों और है आधा राधा कभी कृष्ण है राधा राधा कभी कृष्ण है राधा राधा कभी कृष्ण है राधा राधा कृष्णा कृष्णा राधा राधा कृष्णा कृष्णा राधा राधा कृष्णा राधा कृष्णा कृष्णा राधा राधा कृष्णा कृष्णा राधा राधा कृष्णा कृष्णा राधा राधा कृष्णा
This is the beautiful play of the Lord, Rasa Leela. And so beautifully and interestingly, it continues today in all our lives. It continues in that magical, mystical, uncertain, unpredictable, enigmatic way. All that time. When the gopis expect that Krishna will be here, Krishna is not there. And when the gopis do not expect Krishna to be there, Krishna will be there. When the gopis would have prayed and pined and longed for him, Krishna would not appear. And other time when they have just given up and they are frustrated with life, they are cursing Krishna, that time he will appear. When you need him the most, he will be the most difficult to attain. And when you have lost all hope and you have given up your faith in prayer, that is when Krishna will just manifest. When you think everything is going right and Krishna is with you, something will happen and you'll know everything just fell like a pack of cards. And when you think nothing is going right and I'm not going anywhere, suddenly he will appear and suddenly everything changes into something beautiful. Something you have planned for months and days and years, when it is about to happen, does not happen. Something you never ever imagined, never thought, suddenly appears in front of you. That is the magical, mystical play of the Lord. And we can enjoy this play only when we become a plaything in his hands. He will play with us only when we surrender to becoming a plaything, an instrument of play in his hands. Then these anxieties and ecstasies, these ups and downs, these enigmas and their tragedies will become a play. They will not trouble us anymore. But that process is a bit painful, and the sooner we surrender to this process, the faster we will start to celebrate life. It is said that one day Krishna rushed to the bamboo woods and he was looking helter and skelter and he was looking for something. And all the bamboo twigs and stems, they were looking at Krishna, and Krishna went back. Again Krishna came back and he was like restless and he needed something. And so one of them asked, Krishna, do you need anything? You look so disturbed. Do you need anything? Krishna said, yeah, I need something, but I don't know if you can help me. No, Krishna, you tell me. We will do. What do you need? Can you do anything for me? Yes, Krishna. We can do. Many years ago, when Bhagwan was in Vrindavan and he was talking to students, and when Bhagwan asked the same question, can you do something for me? And one of the students said, Swami, we can do anything for you. Swami, we will die for you. Swami said, no, that is not what I want. Can you live for me? I want you to live for me. Can you do that? So Krishna is in the woods and he's again restless, and these bamboo twigs are asking, Krishna, tell us, what do you want? Krishna says, I will tell, but can you do? Just definitely, Krishna, for you we will do. We have enjoyed your presence. Krishna, we know how beautiful you are, Krishna. We feel so happy being with you. You know, you tell us what you want. And Krishna says, you know what? I want everything of you. Means what? Everything. I want your life. Everything that is you, I want. Can you do it? If you want to help me, that is the only thing you can do. And the bamboo says, okay, Krishna, if that is the only way, if there is no other way and that is the only choice I have, I am fine with it. Then Krishna takes that bamboo, and just as he had told, he makes it now completely hollow, removes everything from that bamboo inside. Not only that, now he begins to make holes. Not one, not two, not three. He continues to puncture that bamboo. Every time the bamboo is made to go through this process of being hurt, when a hole is made, he has to go through this process of being ground. It is painful. But then the bamboo had told Krishna that he will give everything. And Krishna continues to do that. He continues to make only more and more holes into that bamboo. And the bamboo says, it's fine, Krishna. I said that I will give myself to you. So you puncture how many ever holes you want. It is okay. Are you sure? Can I go on? Yes, Krishna. I have already done three holes. You think you can take the pain? I can, Krishna. I will do anything for you, Krishna. Okay. Fourth hole. Fifth hole. You really want to continue? Bamboo, you know, even now you have a choice. I will not make any more holes. No, Krishna, please go on. Make those holes. Every hole is painful. But the subsequent holes are less painful than the previous one, because as the holes happen again, you are not yourself. You have given up yourself so much that these holes happen. After some time, these holes don't pain you. The holes don't bother you. Because the more and more you just give yourself up to Krishna, somehow the pain doesn't reach you after that. And by the time the seventh hole is made, you don't even know what's happened. You know, you've just given up. And after all the holes are made, then, now Krishna cleans it thoroughly, processes it, gives it that appropriate sunlight, gives it appropriate water, whatever processing needs to be done, he does it. He decorates it now. Now Krishna decorates it. And then, what does he do? Then he lifts it. And where does he place it? Right onto his lips. Oh, पर बंसरी राधा की मन की पुकार मोहन के मुख पर बंसरी राधा की मन की पुकार Everyone is ecstatic. Wow, Krishna, what magic, what a flute, what music. Oh my God, everyone is standing still. The cows stop moving, the grass stops waving in the winds, and the rivers, as they say, stop flowing, because they just mesmerize with this flute. And everyone comes to Krishna, and everyone looking at Krishna, so bewitched, mesmerized, and everyone says, oh my God, look at the flute. So precious, so valuable, so lucky. Hey, how did the flute become so lucky, yaar? We are not able to touch Krishna, we are not able to get a moment with him, and this flute is there all the time. And Krishna, even when he's not playing it happily, always keeps it. He ties the towel and he's always there on his waist. Somehow this flute has gained such a prime place in Krishna's life. And they go and ask the flute, how did you become this flute? Why is it that Krishna keeps you always?
And why is it that when Krishna places you on his lips, such ethereal music happens? How can we be like that? Can we also become an instrument of Krishna? Can we also become something so that Krishna can keep us all the time? Can we also do something so that we are not there just for a second and two, but we are there all the time? What did you do? And then the flute says, no, I didn't do anything. I only had to make one choice. That's all. I just said that, Krishna, I give myself completely. That's all. I never knew that one day he will actually blow his breath through me. I never knew that. It was very painful. But you know, I had given my word to Krishna. And it is Krishna. I wanted to live up to it. I know one day, even if he doesn't blow his breath into me, it doesn't matter. Once I decided to give up, I give up. Many years ago, when Bhagwan asked one of the students who was sitting in the portico, what is the book you are reading? And it was a book written by Mr. Victor Kanu. It was called Satya Sai Baba, God Incarnate. Swami immediately picked up that book and Swami said, good book, good man. He's a good man, it's a good book. Swami was so particular, even when people were doing management and studying marketing, he would ask, who is the author? Which book are you studying? And he would say, this author, no, his character is not good. Don't read his books. Even marketing books. Because he always felt that only what is inside will come out. Even when you write something which is secular, may not be spiritual, but it depends on from whom it is coming. That purity matters for Bhagwan. And in 2005, when a devotee from Africa told Swami, Swami, please come to Africa. You have to come to Africa. You came many years ago. You came in 1968. After that, you have never come. You should come. Swami said, no. I'm already there. I'm there in Africa. Swami? Yeah. I'm there. I work through Victor Kanu. I work through Victor Kanu. If you go and study the life of Mr. Victor Krishna Kanu, as he used to call himself, as Bhagwan used to call him, you get a glimpse of how a flute is made in Krishna's hands. Victor was born in Ghana, West Africa, and he was heir to one chieftaincy. You have those different communities. His father was one of the chief of one of these communities. The place called Yoni Bana. And after he did his schooling there, someone sponsored him to go to Oxford to do his higher education. And when he went there, he found it very strange. He said he would travel 4 hours in the train and said no one would talk to him. Everyone would be just busy. Everyone would be just as reading newspaper, or those were not the days of cell phones, so, or simply looking out of the window, but no one would just talk. Just like it is there in some cultures now, it's intrusion of privacy. In some of the Western countries, if you are walking on the street, and if you want to know a particular pathway, say I want to know 24 Hudson Way, where it is, and if there is a gentleman there and you ask him and he probably will tell you that, okay, you go here, here, here and take left and right and you know you will reach that place. But he will never walk his way with you. In a country like India, you will probably find people who will say, okay, fine, you don't know that place, okay, I'll show you that. No problem, I know the area. But in those countries, that person will never do that because he's afraid that this person who asked for help might think that this person is now intruding my privacy. I only asked him for direction. Why is he coming along with me? So different countries have their own cultures, and being brought up in a culture which was very, very friendly, and even if you didn't know a person whom you're meeting for the first time in the train, you know, is coming from Africa where people just talk and people would be very loving to everyone, and here was a country where no one would just talk. So he was finding it very strange taking the train in Liverpool, studying in Oxford. But somehow he studied there, he liked the education. He did his graduation in economics and history and I guess political science and English. And he came back to Africa, and as someone educated in Oxford, he got a good position. He started working for a diamond company, and then the government noticed him, and the government gave him this opportunity to become the ambassador of Sierra Leone to United Kingdom. The government came to know about this guy who's done his education in Oxford and he's working for this diamond company. Why don't we utilize him? He's educated. And so that is how Victor Kanu became the ambassador to United Kingdom and also Norway and Sweden. And once he had this political diplomatic profile, whole life changed. Now whenever he went to London, he was treated royally, and he had a huge mansion. There was a Rolls Royce, there were 40-50 attendants on him, and he used to dine with the royalty, dine with the Queen, and the companies, there's a United African company, the diamond companies, and all those companies, they were treating him like royalty. And so he was used to leading a very rich life. And in 4 years, the government changed, and he lost his job. And then he thought, okay, all these guys, they used to honor me. I mean, I have such good friends. Let me go and get a job in one of these companies. You know, I have done them. They used to treat me like God. So he applies to work in one of these companies. And earlier he used to go in a Rolls Royce. So now obviously he went in his simple car. And the secretary said, the director of company, Mr. John, is busy. Maybe you'll have to come some other day. Okay. Oh my God. This guy, how he used to come after me, how he used to hold banquets for me. Now he doesn't even want to give me an appointment. He says, okay, when can I get an appointment? Okay, you come this day. So he goes that day. And his secretary says that, I'm sorry, he cannot meet you. He's very busy. And that is when life hits him like a ton of bricks. And Victor Kanu realizes who are true friends in life. I remember so many occasions Bhagwan, when talking to us, used to always say, to who are friends? Friends are all like frogs. You know, when there is a lot of water, you have a lot of frogs, and everybody is a friend. As someone said, success is very relative. When you have a lot of success, you have many relatives. When you have no success, you have no relatives. Why do you want to associate with that person? He himself cannot look after it. Just let not bother. If he has a person, his son is in America, oh wow. And his daughter is in Singapore. No, I think we should be friends with them, you know. Be useful. So that is when he realized, oh my God, in which world I was living? Whom did I think as my friends? What was I doing with my life? And he fell back on his Christian roots, on the culture he was brought up in Africa, where people did not judge you by your positions. People did not judge you by your position and what you can do for them. People were just naturally courteous. They were naturally nice. And he fell back on his years in school when he used to go to the church, when he believed in a superpower. In the African culture, they believed in this trinity of a super spirit and the other spirits and angels and ancestors. All these three form the sacred triangle. So it was a process of deep spiritual introspection, and that led him to become very spiritual, and eventually he joined the Spiritualist Association of Britain. Now this is an organization where people used to heal others by communicating with our ancestors. So these are people, when you go to them and tell them your problems, they try to find out the root of your problem, because everything is not just connected to what is happening now. That is the reason why, you know, our diseases get complicated. If there is a pain happening in the back and thinking that it is probably because, you know, I slept on the wrong side, that could be one of the occasions, but, and you take medications and it doesn't go, you do something else, it doesn't go, you do something more and still it doesn't go, because the problem is not that, the problem is something else, the root is somewhere else. They say the last manifestation of a problem is in the physical realm. We have so many bodies, we have the astral body, the causal body, as Bhagavan used to say. So when some disturbance happens in all those planes, the last manifestation is in the physical body. So the people in the Spiritualist Association of Britain, they used to try to communicate with every person's ancestors and try and find solutions to their problems. We all have our guardian angels, we all have our ancestors who love us. And that is why Swami was so particular about performing these rites, because the connection is always there. Swami was so particular about gratitude. There was not a discourse to the students where he did not mention about gratitude. And gratitude to parents was paramount, uncompromisable. And as he practiced that profession, he was doing well. He realized that he has some sort of a gift. He was able to heal people. And eventually, he was doing so good that he was being made the president of the Spiritualist Association of Britain. So he was completely back to his roots. And as the president, he was being invited to different places. So sometime in early 80s, 79, he had gone to one of these churches, and there was a priest, a lady. She narrated the story of Jesus, because it was Christmas time, it was Christmas Eve. And Victor Kanyu heard it with rapt attention. Even though you have heard the stories, you know, just like Bhagavan's stories, you hear it again, you always feel thrilled, you always feel so excited. And now that he was into it so much, he enjoyed that presentation made by the priest. And suddenly at the end of that presentation, this lady, Rosa, she said something which stunned Victor Kanu. She said, "This is not history. This is happening even now. There is a man in India who does the same things that everything I have narrated to you. You can see Christ come alive." What? Is there really a man in India who does everything that Christ did? And Victor got so inquisitive. He wanted to read. That was Christmas season, he could not get many books. And then he picked up the Sai Baba, Holy Man and the Psychiatrist. And he read that book cover to cover. Every weekend he would read that book. And something interesting had happened about 5 years prior to this. You know, when he was leading that high life in England, it was the culture there, you know, in the evening you just go to the pub and you have a drink and have a cigar and, you know, hang out with friends and you come back completely exhausted. And this is how he was leading his life. One day, he remembered, he came back and he was so exhausted. He was completely inebriated, he had drunk, and he just collapsed on his bed. And he remembers that he had a very strange dream. He felt that someone, some two angels came and took him. And he was going in the sky, clear blue sky. And he was flying through the heavens until he came to a place where there was this lovely arch. And in the arch there was again another angel, and this angel was welcoming him. And once they came to this arch, the angels who brought him left, and the other angel welcomed him, and he came into this premises, and he heard the sounds. The sounds were so sacred, it reminded him of the sacred African sounds. And for some reason he felt so much at home. He felt that he was being charged with something very spiritual. He felt that there was something happening deep within. It was so peaceful. It was so sanctifying. Then when he got up that morning, he said, "I don't know what happened to me. But from that day, I don't know how, but I just developed this dislike for alcohol and cigar and hanging out in the pubs. I don't know how, but it just happened. I just developed that instant aversion to all this." And then later, when he became the president of the Spiritualist Association of Britain, one morning, when he was doing his meditation, there was some smoke from the window. There was the smoke that came. It was a bright smoke. And that smoke, suddenly, very interestingly, was forming some shape. And as he looked keenly, that smoke formed the shape of a lion. It was not scary, but it was very clear. He was seeing the smoke showing itself to him as a lion. And then that went. Again the smoke came. And again the smoke rearranged its waves, and it was the letters joy. Lion, joy. He didn't understand what is all this happening. That had happened 2 years ago, and he could not make any sense out of it. And then this revelation happens from the priest that there is a person like Jesus, and he starts reading the book, and he comes to know that there is an organization, this was 1980, in Britain, who are devotees of the Sai Baba. And he meets the head of this organization, the Sai Baba Center there, Mr. Tirath Patel, and he asks him, "Can I see Sai Baba?" And he said, "Yeah, we are planning a trip. Do you want to join?" He said, "Yeah, I want to, but I can't make it. I don't have that much money now." He said, "No problem, we will arrange for the funds. If you really want to come, you can come." He said, no, it's okay, I don't want to bother anyone. He says, "No, I don't want to take anyone's funds, and if Sai Baba wants me, what will happen?" And that night, as he was reading this book, somehow that feeling came so strongly that, I have to see this person. And going by what he was experiencing, that night he told, looking at the photograph of Bhagwan, "I don't know who you are, but from what I have read about you and what I have heard about you, you are God. I completely believe in this. Now if you accept me as your devotee, please give me a sign." This is the prayer he made 11 o'clock in the night, and he slept. And that night he got up startled with a dream, because that night he saw that in the healing chair where he used to sit and heal people, he saw in the dream that there was this person, the same orange person, sitting in the same chair where he used to sit. And he got very scared. Oh, is he really there? He thought it was real. And he was thinking of trying to go near him. And as he was trying to go near him, and this person turned. And when this person turned, he could not believe. It was too much for him to accept, too much for him to really imagine that this is really happening. Am I really seeing this person? And it was scary. It was unbelievable. So he just started, "Oh Jesus, save me, Jesus." And he got up from sleep. And he was sweating. You cannot imagine. Oh my God. I just told him that give me a sign. Is he really this? And then a few days later, an envelope arrives. A very old friend whom he had not met for years suddenly sends this check and says, "I owe you this money. Please accept." It was £500. Enough amount to go to India. At the same time, his mother sends a letter from Africa saying she needs some money. And now he is thinking, what should I do? It is a very difficult dilemma. Should I make these tickets? Or should I send it home? But somehow on that occasion he felt, no, this Baba is testing me. I will go to him. He will take care of everything. If he can take care of me, he can take care of my mother too. That conviction had become so strong, he thought, Baba will definitely take care of my mother. And that is how he landed in India. And the first darshan of Bhagwan in Puttaparthi, he says, I cannot describe it, but I just knew that he is God. The way he walked, the way he was interacting, and in the first darshan itself, Swami picked him up. And Swami said, come to Vrindavan. Swami was going to Vrindavan, to Whitefield. Swami said, I will perform your spiritual marriage. Come to Vrindavan. And that is how he reaches Vrindavan. In fact, before he started on this trip, he had another dream of Swami, where Swami was looking very blue, even though his robe was red, orange, the usual color, but his face was very blue and he was very scared. He thought, is Baba not well or something? Why is he looking so blue? He didn't have an answer then, and then Bhagwan tells him to go to Vrindavan. So in Vrindavan, Swami calls him, and as soon as they are with Bhagwan in the interview room, Swami waves his hand and he creates plums and figs which are available only in Africa. And he is like amazed. All that lady had said about Jesus was just happening. And then Swami creates a sacred thread and he chants mantras and he does the spiritual remarriage, which is generally done in India after the husband turns 60 to mark the start of the spiritual journey of the couple. So Swami performs the Sashti Purti. And then in that interview, there's another Italian lady who's come with an attendant, and she was not able to walk, and she was sitting there on the chair, and Bhagwan was sitting opposite. She was there in one corner of the interview room. And then Swami looked at her and Swami said, come on, get up. And this lady got up. And everything that Victor Kanu had heard, he was seeing in real life. That lady got up, she came to Swami, and then Bhagwan took her by her hand, went inside, and then gave her a sari. And just before the interview was over, Victor Kanu, he told Swami, Swami, I saw you before I came. Swami said, yes, I gave you darshan. But Swami, you are blue. And he said, ah, blue, yes, blue, mysterious, mysterious. And then, as they came out of the interview room, this lady was so ecstatic. He was just jumping in joy. He was just hailing Swami and he was hailing God and he was just in ecstasy. And Victor Kanu knew that he had seen God. After that, Bhagwan went to Ooty. And Victor Kanu followed Bhagwan to Ooty. And he says, after that trip, I knew that there is no one on this planet as spectacular as him. In fact, even when the earlier masters used to cure, they would pray to God and say, "Go, God, my father, cure him." But here was someone who just said, "Get up," and that lady got up. Who just willed and things happened. And he was so convinced that he is the God that my ancestors have prayed. He is the God that whole humanity has prayed. That he decides to give his life for Bhagwan. And that is when his trips to Prashanti become frequent. He gets very fascinated with the education and human values movement. He starts taking the EHV lessons to schools in London. There is this Balvikas EHV conference in the early 80s, 82, 83, and he gets teachers from London. And very deeply now engaged, he becomes so convinced that the best way to heal this world is to somehow take these values of truth, righteousness, peace, love and non-violence to the younger generation. He felt that is the only way the world can become a better place. And he was successful in taking these values to certain schools in UK. And he had become an inspiration because everyone saw him as someone who was so passionate about investing his time and energy to create a better generation. And it is during this time that in 1989, when he has the interview with Bhagwan along with his wife Genevieve, Swami tells him, "Victor, I want you to go to Zambia." "For what, Swami?" "I want you to build a school there." Zambia? He had never been to Zambia. He was born in Ghana and then he went to London. And he was there. He had never really traveled much of Africa. And he says, "Swami, how do I do this?" And that is when Bhagwan says, "Sell your house." And Victor, the kind of person that he is, he says, "The only thought that came to me in that moment is that parable from the Bible when a rich man came to Jesus and said, 'Oh Lord, I have done so many things but I have not found redemption in my life. Please redeem me.' And Jesus says, 'Yes, I will redeem you. But can you do something? Tell me, Lord, I will do anything. But you have to redeem me.' Then Jesus says, 'Give up everything and follow me.' And this man runs away. I can't give up everything, come on." And Victor says, "I didn't want to be that man of the Bible." And he said, "Yes, Swami." But his wife was little perplexed. And she said, "Swami, we have to build a school, selling our house. If that money is not enough, what do we do?" Swami says, "Take a loan." And the couple, they step out of the interview room, go straight to London and wind up everything they sell. Everything, their car, their curtains, their pans, their home, everything. Take whatever they can gather and go to a land that they do not know what to do. They move to Zambia. "Okay, Swami said we have to build a school, but where to build a school? What kind of school?" And that is when Victor sends his wife Genevieve again to Prashantinilam, because they thought maybe they will build a school in the heart of Zambia, because the capital city of Zambia, probably you have resources, you know, easy to build a school there. Otherwise you have to build it somewhere in the countryside and you'll have area, but you know, very difficult. And at that point in time, Zambia, even now Zambia is in extreme poverty. 70% of Zambian population is under the poverty line, even now. Where do you get resources? And his wife comes to Prashantinilam and Swami says, "No, I don't want the school in the capital city. You have to go and do it in the rural area. And that is where they build the school. Difficult. There is no road, no water, no electricity. He had no experience in building a school, but he works with the contractors. Himself works with the contractors, and eventually the school comes up. Whether to do a primary school or a secondary school, Swami tells, no. Do the secondary, do the primary, take this many children. And when it comes to taking students for the secondary school, his school is not recognized. Nobody knows about the school. He does not, says, if I blew the whistle, everyone came for primary school. Because there is no education there. But if I want to build, but who will come for the secondary? No one. So ultimately he ended up taking all those students who were rejected from all the other schools. All the students who did not pass the cutoff marks, basically the failures. And everyone laughed at him and said, you want to take these students? These students are unteachables. You can't teach them. And they have no facilities. They have no brains. But Victor says, no. I will take these students. And in 2-3 years, this school is hailed as the miracle school of Africa. Why? Because the results of this school is 100% success. They have 100% success with 50% distinction. It had never happened in the history of Africa, in the history of Zambia. It had never happened in any school. And he was able to do with those students who were branded as unteachables. And when people asked Victor, how were you able to do it? How were you able to teach it? He said, nothing. We just poured. We just poured love. We just poured. It is just love, love, love. So he and his wife, they just poured everything that was, every bit of love in them, into those students. And that is how the miracle school in Africa was built, and it continues even today. That is when Africa came on the limelight, on the radar of United Nations. And United Nations then invites Victor Kanu to the General Assembly because they were fascinated with his ideals about his 5 values. And the UN Habitat then requests Kanu to solve the water problem in Africa through human values. And that is how he gets deeply involved, not only in education, but also in solving all African issues through the value of Satya Dharma, Shanti, Prema and Ahimsa. And you had the Institute of Satya Sai Education set up in Africa, 1999. And it was during this time, after this, when Victor was once not well, he had a cardiac problem, and Dr. Michael Goldstein and the others in the organization, they brought him to Prashantinilam, and he was in a super speciality hospital, and Swami said, no operation. Swami sent Vibhuti, and Swami said, he will be fine. And Victor was just in the ICU for a few days, and he was back. And after that, he continued to work. He built a school in the town and village where he was born. And in 2011, they celebrated the 20 years of the school in Zambia. It was a huge function. It was a great moment of fulfillment. And in September 2011, on one quiet morning, in his sleep, Victor becomes the eternal melody of Krishna. During an interview with Radio Sai in 2007, when the interviewer had asked him, told him that, you know, you're going to live long. This was after he recovered from his illness. Then Victor said, no, Swami has told me that he needs me to be with Prem Sai. He had told this in 2007. Swami had told me that I have to come back to be with him, to work for him. So, I am not hoping for a long life. Bhagwan left in April 2011 and Victor merged with the Lord in September 2011. I told you, when it was asked to Bhagwan, Swami, please come to Africa. Swami said, I am there, I am working through Victor Kanu. And why and how did Kanu, Victor Krishna Kanu, become such a fantastic flute? Because when the Lord wanted to make the holes, He said, Lord, I will never run away. I will give myself to you. Make how many holes you want. I will give myself to you. I give myself to you, O Sa. I give myself to you, so you can use me. I give myself to you. Here I am. Here I stand. Lord, my life is in your hand. All my dream, all my plan, Lord, I place them in your hand. I give myself to you, O Sa. I give myself to you, so you can use me. I give myself to you, O Sa.
There was only one prayer of Kanu when he used to make when he became the president of the Spiritualist Association of Britain. Every morning in his meditation, he used to sit and say, O Lord, please use me, make me an instrument in your hands for your glory and for the betterment of mankind. O Lord, please use me, please make me an instrument in your hands to further your glory and for the betterment of mankind. This was the constant prayer. And that is how Lord turned his life to be. If we have to become the flute, we have to first give up. Once you give up and become empty, then he will fill you. He will fill you, he will fulfill you, and he will make your life eternally fulfilled. Ooh. 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 Samasta loka sukhino bhavantu, samasta loka sukhino bhavantu, samasta loka sukhino bhavantu. Om shanti shanti shanti. Thank you very much for your patient listening. And I thank Bhagwan for this opportunity to share his love and his message with all of you. Sai Ram.
So with that, dear listeners, it's time to draw the curtains on this day-long Thursday live. We hope you enjoyed this beautiful story of how Bhagwan shaped Mr. Victor Krishna Kanu. I think the story of every devotee has very deep lessons, especially those who have lived in physical proximity of Bhagwan. You can see how the master sculptor very beautifully chisels every part of our personality so that one day we shine in his glory, so that one day our life becomes his melody. Dear listeners, please feel free to write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and on behalf of all of us at Radio Sai, we offer our gratitude to each one of you for being with us on this beautiful Thursday. And of course, we place ourselves at his lotus feet for blessing us with this priceless opportunity of ruminating on his love, on his message, and on his glory. Thank you so much. Sarah.